Marcus Bageltech, big the midweek show, the weekly look at the overall technology roundup that there's been on a Thursday night so far this week with technology. We've got joining us the usual bunch. We've got Mr. James Hart, top left, giving us a great salute. Below, next to him, we've got Ian Grant, his second visit to the show. Well done, mate. Return journey. That, you know, you've made it when you get on here twice. Sarah Gray below him. And last but by no means least, Mr. Eric Lanigan from Tech Talkback. How's the week been, everyone?
Mad, crazy.
Interesting.
Isn't it always?
So, James, busy week.
Yeah, busy at work. I'm still sending people to Manchester. Why? Why am I still sending people to Manchester? Have they not got their own people? But yesterday, I also I ducked out of work to go and see a band. The first gig I'd been in 2011.
You took.
I hadn't experienced a sticky floor and the loud music in a long while.
Oh.
Moving on.
Sticky floor.
There's
ladies and gentlemen.
There's a title already. So you took? Did you throw a sickie for it, or was it just to kind of? I've got to go out to get something, some stamps.
Yes, that's right. I've just got to pop over the road and came back. Came back, ears ringing and smelling of watered down lager.
If you've been down the post office, Jack, what's all that noise?
Of course, if it was a sickie, he's hardly going to admit it, seeing as we're broadcasting on the internet.
Yeah, because like anyone's watching.
Bots might be watching.
Do you get the thing where you come back and you're like, James, I know you went to the post office to get some stamps, but why are your shoes sticking to the floor?
Mm-hmm.
Got the squelch walking. Ian, good week, mate. Good week.
No, not bad, not bad. I've had the joy today of explaining to someone what the enter key was on that keyboard. Can you believe that?
The enter key?
Yes, he said, which one's the enter key? We're doing an ADSL migration, so we've had sort of ring guys up and say, you have to put a new username and password into your routers and go on this page, click here, click this. And I had one today, didn't know what the enter key was.
Oh, bloody hell.
Insurance salesman, isn't it great?
But no, it sounds like my mother.
The other thing you'll like, we had to unblock sex toys from our filters because we're insuring the company makes them. Isn't that good?
Your insurance company makes sex toys?
No, an insurance company is insuring a company who manufactures them.
And you had to unblock them from?
The filters, so we could see their website.
Oh, I got you right. I was thinking filters, like as in water filters. What the hell are you putting sex toys in water filters for?
As in our web filters that stop people looking at stupid things at work.
The one thing I'm surprised about this evening is we've got about six show titles already.
I'm still thinking about insurance companies selling sex toys.
I did. I used to do some work for a guy years ago, and I took pictures of this firm. And the guy used, you know, CE marks that you get on your phone, the C and the curly C and the curly E mark, yeah?
Yeah.
And you have to comply to European standards to get this mark. Well, this guy used to apply these marks, and he landed a contract to do a firm that vended sex toys in Amsterdam out of, like drinks dispensing machines. So you'd have the relevant products stood upright in the curly spiral wheel, and you'd put in your whatever euros, and it would dispense the item and drop it down into the bottom, and you'd reach in and pick it out, and it was in the middle of the street. I want to live in Amsterdam.
As you do.
I'm sorry, that's not a great link to say. Hello, Sarah, how are you?
I was just going to ask Ian where the any key was, seeing as he was doing those sort of things this week.
Oh, it's a special key. I've got an order of them in. I'll send you one when I get one.
Please do. I would like one.
How's the week been at the council?
Yeah, it's been fine. I've been having some fun and games with something new that we're planning.
Okay. So, now, you've been working from home today, though, haven't you?
I have indeed. You've been on Twitter. I try to do on a Thursday, which is, it works out better for doing the show. So
you've got to be careful. Like you're saying about James getting caught out for being on the show tonight. You only go on Twitter when you're working from home, mate. There's a pattern. There's a pattern.
Thanks for that, Ewan.
There's a pattern.
Yeah, you know when I'm working at home, don't you?
What it means is you need to go on Twitter a little bit when you're at work. There you go.
I do occasionally. I just generally don't think about it. Whereas I have TweetDeck open all the time on my screen when I'm at home. So, well, when I'm working at home anyway, so
right.
It's there.
Exactly.
A bit more in my face, so I tend to notice things a bit more.
And finally, Eric Tongue Lash Lanigan. still
it's
got
a download service. It's not a streaming service. It's a download service. It may stream when it comes out, but that's not what they announced yet. Just want to make that clear.
Started already.
Eric, calm down, Eric. It's only an iCloud.
Eric has had two weeks now of tech talkback where there's been the chat room's been like a cat of nine tails, and he's got welts across his face from all the lashing he's been getting. Tough group tonight, mate.
Yes, well, for me it's this morning, but every news site, every CNET, ZDNet, GigaOM, Ars Technica, every mainstream blog out there says one thing, Engadget, and chat room believes otherwise, based on Apple's website, of language that is not there.
Truthful, mate.
Beginning to think this show is becoming the wind down for Eric.
I go on this show, they're all nice to me, they don't disagree with what I say.
Positive reinforcement, yes.
The week in technology, so far as it's been, I mean, we've got another day to go, I know, but we had the Apple keynote as well this week, which was fantastic. We had Microsoft stumping up at E3. We had Nintendo stumping up at E3 as well, and also PlayStation came out with their relevant prerequisites, which not sure. And then we've had what have we had? Facebook have had a screw up as well, which has not gone very well. There's a fair old bit to talk about. What should we start with?
Should we start with E3 and the fun you can have with bits of plastic?
No, that's going back to the vending machine.
Yeah.
E3 then. So, was it Monday? Was it Monday? Tuesday? Monday?
Monday. Officially, press conferences were Monday. Show opened Tuesday.
So we've got E3 on Monday. Was Microsoft were the first up, weren't they? We've got a new UI for the Xbox 360. That's got to be a real benefit, surely. Because the UIs were all—they're changing like the UI, like confetti.
Yes, exactly. Like, and it is the UI. It's not a tech demo. That is the UI. They have announced it, and that is coming out, people. No. Get your facts right. I'm sick of this crap.
Not that you're really upset by that or anything.
Not much. No.
No.
I mean, the whole thing with Microsoft was that we got the we got a new steering wheel from Microsoft. Was anyone excited about that?
We did?
Yeah, there was a new steering wheel. A wireless steering wheel.
It's not like a Kinect where you just have to pretend you've got one.
Yeah, I thought you just have to do this if you get the Kinect. Why do you need a wheel? Just hold your hands up like that.
No, apparently they came out with a whole new wheel thing from Microsoft. It was a greeny kind of wheelie type thing. There we go. And it connected by of something magic to back to the console. But also they had, there we go. It was just like that, but it was a U shape. It wasn't the Nintendo thing. They also said that they've got Bing voice search though, and they've got Bing voice control for Hulu, Netflix, YouTube and live TV. So, is that going to make us feel any different about the Xbox 360, or is it just kind of a bit samey?
It's a bit meh, really.
Bit naff.
Yeah, more. Bit meh.
Yeah.
Just yet another one of those things. They're adding, they seem to be sort of ingrained Bing in everything now. They've got to try and find some use for it after all, because no one really uses it as a search engine.
Nobody likes an ingrained Bing.
Have they stopped stealing the results from Google yet, though, or not?
I don't think it was
because
I think.
Is that just growing pains?
No, it was theft. I think.
For those who aren't watching the video, by the way, Eric was doing a fantastic demonstration of how not to play Mario Kart Wii.
Yeah.
Thanks, James, because I'm not watching it.
Oh, yes.
I've posted the link in the chat room for the U-shaped Microsoft wheel. $60 it's going to come for, but it doesn't pivot.
Can you play your own spaceship with that?
Anyone else notice the wire?
On what?
On the Wii U.
Okay, we hadn't started talking about the Wii U. Let's talk about the Wii U then.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were.
No, we were talking about
Spoiler alert.
The Microsoft. If you're listening to this for a plot, you shouldn't have started.
Well, wait. So we'll get that in a second, I guess. But Xbox, I would say that based on their announcements, I mean, it's clearly the most robust of the three gaming platforms, the three consoles. I would say that it cements their position as the first one to get in the home, you know, the one to beat, the one that you would be the most... without if you didn't have it. It's clearly becoming a very mature platform. They also said they've hinted, they didn't really say what in the heck they were talking about, but they did say it's going to support live TV in the near future. So, and the rumors are it's also going to gain some DVR capabilities. It also is getting YouTube. And of course, it's got all the Bing stuff, like you said. And I think Kinect is also the one to beat in terms of the motion gaming and the novel fun that comes with that. So I think they're doing an incredible job.
You know, it's my contention that Microsoft just got really, really lucky. They came up with the Xbox 360 and said, that's a pretty good gaming machine. And I said, look at all the cool stuff what you can do with it. And they've just come with product after product after product. And the technology hasn't changed. It's just new cool stuff you can do with it. And it's amazing that it's stood the test of time now.
But I think, I mean, I think this is one of the key points that's come out from what's happened at E3 this week and their track record up to E3. If you look at Microsoft, they've got what seems to be very much like an almost genuine research department. As in, if you've got a research department, what you do is you give them a budget. And that's their budget. And you don't start talking about what they make and what you can sell as a result of what they come up with through their research. And there's no productivity bonuses associated with them. You just say, here's an amount of money, go screw around and you know, think off the page, come out with things that are completely different. And the other, a few weeks back,
these ideas.
A few weeks ago, they came back with tons of stuff that were based around Kinect. One of the things that Microsoft have also done, which is very, very positive, I think, is that they haven't let the community, or they haven't restricted the community from playing with Kinect. There's people gone out there and taken the code from Kinect, and I don't think they've pushed out the source code for it or anything like that, but if people come up with a new application for Kinect, they're not, like Apple would be, jumping in there and saying, what are you doing? Switch it off now. That's ours, not yours. It's licensed to you. It's not ours. And they get extremely anal about it.
But conversely, conversely, there aren't, I've heard, I don't know for a fact, but I've heard that there aren't that many decent Kinect games. There hasn't been a groundswell of them. Therefore, people have been to go, what the hell am I going to do with this now? I'm going to make something with it.
But that, I think that's true of every, I mean, this goes back to what Eric said about it being the most robust platform. I think that comment is true of every platform. There is nothing for Move out there that's of any quality. There is nothing for Nintendo Motion that's out there of any quality, and there is nothing out there for Kinect of any quality. You're maybe even a year away, I would say, at this point, of getting something that's really good for all of those platforms.
And yet Kinect offers some additional benefits that the other things that are merely motion gaming don't offer. For instance, I heard some people talking about from like an E3 report, I don't know what game this is, but they were describing how because the Kinect has a color VGA camera, it can scan your face. And your avatar that you play as in the game is actually your face, or even maybe it models like your entire body based on your, you know, your body shape, which it can do because it can sense depth and everything as well. It can also do video conferencing, soon to be with Skype. And now it does voice commands. I mean, that is one killer peripheral. And interestingly, you were talking about Microsoft and their R&D, the Kinect came to them, which is really interesting. Mm. The company came to them, shopped it around. I don't know if they ever got the Sony. Maybe they went to Microsoft first, or they outbid them or something. But we do know that the company said that Apple was jerks to them. They sent them away. They didn't want to, they said, we never want to do business with Apple. Although I don't know how Apple would have really used the technology. Nevertheless, I think it gave Microsoft the strongest gaming platform and the strongest universal peripheral for every family member and all types of games and even online interactions.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kinect is one of those things that Microsoft could have really ruined for the community, and they haven't, and that's got to be credit to them. The question in the chat room, Carl saying in the chat room, I'm 6'7", so he's only got a 1080p screen, so his avatar wouldn't fit on. My problem is that my screen's 1920 wide, and I still wouldn't get my avatar on. That's a different issue. But the whole point.
By the way,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry, but by the way, they did that.
Go ahead, Eric.
Crosstalk. They did backtrack on the cracking down and yelling at people who were using the Kinect on Windows and writing their own code. Initially, they said that was against the rules. They didn't like that. And they totally reversed course. And to the point that they're at some point soon going to release an SDK. In fact, they may have already released an SDK for Kinect for Windows for non-commercial purposes. You can't release a commercial game with it. And I think they said that in some point in the future, they will release a commercial SDK as well.
Well, good on them.
People are doing far too many cool things with the Kinect from Microsoft to squash it, I think. It's got to that point where there's too many nifty little things. If you do a search on YouTube, you can see all sorts of clever little uses people are finding for the Kinect outside of sort of gaming.
The question that we've got here in the chat room is Steve saying he questions that whether Kinect has got longevity to it. It's certainly got the spur of the moment, and there's a lot of cool stuff that's going on with it. But is there a longevity associated with that? Is it going to stand the test of time, or is Kinect going to just be a fad?
I think Kinect's a little bit better in a way that it's a great thing. It's something you don't need a paddle for or anything. You can stand and wave your arms around like an idiot in front of your console and do stuff, and that is much more spontaneous than having to wave around your nunchucker and things when you've got the Wii kind of thing. So no, I do think it's a better idea maybe than all the other ones, which involve either stick with a Wii ball on or your Wii nunchucker type stuff.
Go ahead, Eric.
And if you wanted to add a blue ball to the end of your thumb or something, you could totally do that. That's the thing, is because it's a camera, because it maps your skeleton. I mean, it's an amazing thing. It's really the most futuristic consumer peripheral that we've seen in years. But, you know, like Kinect plus the iPad are like the only innovative things we've ever seen lately. So I think far from dying out or being a fad, I think it's going to take a few years before it might take the end of the decade before we really see the potential that type of device offers.
I think one of the points that's being made in the chat room here is probably very valid, is that the Kinect may be all things to all people, but I haven't had a go with it, so I don't know how good the tracking is, but I've heard it's very, very good. But one of the things that's a key feature is that you need a fairly big living room for this, and in America, that's probably not an issue, where you're talking about the average size of houses being at about 2,200 feet, perhaps, square feet-ish. Whereas in the UK, the average size of a house is only at 1,400 square feet. So living rooms are probably no more than about 13 foot square. Now, that really becomes a very constraining effort for the Kinect to deal with. Go ahead, James, you're saying?
I was going to say most rooms in the UK are just mostly telly now, aren't they? They're just one flat wall.
One wall's a sleepy, isn't it?
Yeah. I was going to say that there are two ways this can go. One, other games manufacturers are going to go, that's a really cool idea. The iToy was crap. We need something a bit better. And everyone will adopt the Kinect style thing. Or there will be another injection of innovation. But given that E3 this year hasn't been anything stand back in amazement, wow, bloody hell, that's amazing. Unless somebody gets a dashboard of an old Aston Martin and says, we're going to sell one of these, you can drive. You can pretend to drive around a real 1960s Vantage or something. It's as Eric says, it's going to be a good few years before anybody comes up with something brand new and more versatile.
Question from the chat room here: can anyone think of a game that is better because of Kinect than it would be on a normal game controller or pad? And the answer is no. I think
dancing games.
Surely those are the ones that lend themselves really nicely to the Kinect.
But go ahead, Eric.
Oh, I didn't hear the beginning of that got cut off, but I think traditional first person shooters, I don't know, but I mean obviously any of those dancing games, any games that are designed and the kinds of novel games and games we haven't yet seen invented that work by recognizing your body. But also I can't believe this has not been a more common thing, because when I got the Wii like 3 or 4 years ago, whenever it like got like a year after it came out, I had a Metroid for it, and the aiming with the Wiimote was so incredibly superior to aiming with any mouse or any thumb joystick or anything I'd ever used before. And like nothing has picked up on that really. I perhaps PlayStation 3 has a bunch of games that now include the Move for support for aiming, but I haven't really seen it. And maybe they're also concerned about, you know, tournament play and online play giving someone an unfair advantage. But I think Kinect also has the same capability in that regard that PlayStation and Nintendo have from what I've seen. And I think that anything that involves aiming of any kind would stand to benefit enormously from motion tracking.
Would you do this to the screen then, Ed? Just point at the screen then? Is that the idea?
Exactly.
Move was a huge leap forwards in terms of... Motion... It was a huge leap forwards for the Nintendo platform, and its tracking was significantly improved, but no one came along to the party. There's not a lot of games out there that have got motion compatibility. Move, I think, actually tracks fairly poorly. from what I've seen, particularly if you mount it in the kind of Buck Rogers-y type gun. If you put it on games, you can actually physically point it at the screen and hold your hand still, and you can see the cursor slowly tracking down across to one side or the other. It loses tracking very, very easily. It's not as good as motion by any stretch, but the problem is no one's picked up on motion. There's cricket games that have come out. There's Shane Warne cricket that came out for Wii. I mean, that's a classic where motion would have been used, but they just said, we wanted to produce it. We wanted to get it out faster. The SDK didn't come out fast enough for the motion programmer, so we released the game anyway, and no one's taken it.
Now, let me ask you guys this, especially some doubters in the chat room saying Kinect may just be a fad. Suppose you're a new consumer, you're looking at Kinect. Next to the shelf, you see a Wii U with a giant paddle that they expect you to hold and swing it around. John, now, if you're going to play this for motion gaming, if Nintendo didn't have Mario, Zelda, Star Fox, and Metroid, and Donkey Kong, they would sell no consoles at this point. There's no benefit.
I've got to say, I mean, the Wii had their big thing at E3, and they said that Zelda was 25 years old, and I really don't get that, because that means that Robin Williams' youngest kid is 25 years of age now, which may be true, because she got called Zelda. But the paddle thing, the Wii U thing, I looked at that and I was, it was like the king's new clothes. It was kind of like, are they serious? Do they really mean this?
Also, bear in mind, they're not talking about now. They're talking about possibly a year and a half's time.
It's the top WTF product of 2011.
but Nintendo really do know the Japanese market really well. And I imagine it's going to sell absolutely loads in Japan. And everyone in the rest of the world is just going to go, "It's as Tone said, it's a tea tray with a deli in it."
It is. No, it absolutely is. No, it's exactly right. But number one, this thing is not a tablet. It is not something that you can use by itself. You've got to have your Wii on, and you've got to be playing a game that's being driven by the Wii. This thing doesn't run by itself. It's totally dependent on the Wii. And I got the impression looking at it that this thing was a wireless device. But Sarah, you're saying that it's not. It's a wired device.
Yeah, I've been looking at a couple of demos, and in all the cases I've seen, there's this thick wire hanging down from...
No, I know what you're talking about, Sarah, but that's just for the demonstration. That's just so that people don't walk off with it, and so that it's probably security lock, but also it's the power cable.
It looked like it was part of it.
So this thing, you could play it tethered because it needs the power, or you can play it untethered because it's got a backup battery, but it's a wireless connectivity.
Ah, right. Maybe it was just powered then while it was being used.
Yeah, it's certainly wireless, because in all their videos they show it with no wires.
Right, okay. Right.
I didn't like the idea.
They show guitars with no wires as well, mate. Sorry, Ian, say again.
I said, I didn't like the idea where you could play your game for a while, then someone wants to watch the TV and you carry on the little tea tray.
Yeah, but a lot of people think that's because this thing's a tablet by itself, and it's not. You've still got to have the Wii running.
Oh yeah.
The other thing that struck me with it is if you're playing, supposing you're playing something like tennis, are you telling me you're going to get hold of it with one hand and whack it back like you would a tennis ball, like if you're using the Wii at the moment? That's just ridiculous.
You're going to do it. It's two-handed. It's girly tennis.
Yeah, but okay. What about if you're playing golf? You're going to swing it back like this. It's this big.
It's going to end up with a wrist strap. It's going to end up with a plastic case in it. It's just going to be splash-proof.
Dude, have you seen the size of this thing? It's not going to do a wrist strap. It's going to have to be a safety harness.
Yeah, I know. It's what the point. How are you going to swing it like a golf club?
It's going to have to. You're going to have to pull on something that goes under your crotch and over your shoulders, and you're going to have a bungee on it that holds the thing and makes sure that it doesn't go anywhere.
It's gonna be surrounded by like those orange child water wings that are just like this giant inflatable thing to prevent you from slamming it against your TV and your coffee table and everything.
There's an inflatable bumper that goes on it. I love that. Yeah. So hit or miss, are we saying then?
Miss.
For a year and a half more time, I just think it's crazy.
See, what's interesting as well for me, I mean, we're going to talk about WWDC and a lot more about Apple tomorrow on the Mac Show, so I don't want to steal from that. Chat room saying miss instantly, by the way. But I looked at Lion, I'm kind of like, this looks really Marmite. This is, people are going to love this idea, or they're absolutely going to loathe and hate it. And I'm looking at the Wii U and I'm getting the same kind of thing. Everything that I've seen so far, nothing makes me think that I want to get it, and nothing makes me think that anyone is going to want to get this thing.
Couple of other problems. Number one, the graphics, according to one report that I've seen, and they've been unclear, they haven't released the full details. One person report said that he has reason to think less powerful graphics than the PS3 or the Xbox, which seems crazy. Also, it's Nintendo's second system in the same generation of consoles. So you've got the Xbox, the PS3, the Wii. Now they want you to buy another one, which presumably will have to be replaced when Sony and Microsoft do their next one. Another thing, the games, they keep talking about everything being unique experiences, and I don't see any experience from this thing, from this giant paddle device. They showed hide and seek, for God's sake. I mean, yeah, I'm going to buy a game system to play hide and seek. So they've got to come up with some better ideas, and maybe some more powerful hardware too, because right now when you're looking at Kinect especially, and even the PlayStation Move, which is arguably just a better Wii with a more accurate sensor and a better 720p graphics and a Blu-ray player and a robust ecosystem of online apps and games and rentals and things, I don't see what Nintendo has to offer besides Mario, Zelda, Metroid, and Donkey Kong.
But mate, it is unique because there's nothing out there that's that crap.
You got me there.
I always think the Wii fits a particular niche, as I've said before. It fits the niche of little children and old and the older generation.
That's not what you said before. You said kids and grannies.
Kids and grannies, exactly.
Don't be political.
Kids and grannies, it's two ends of a market that it works superbly in. The interface is really simple. Wii Sports is a great fun for them to play, but that's what it's good for. Stick to your strengths. It's got a niche in the market.
But even this doesn't fulfill the niche, because some old dear is going to pick up this bizarre little tea tray with the dongles on and just go, I don't know what to do with this. And they'll start swinging it around and crashing.
And they're going to set their coffee on it and ruin the whole thing.
Well, it's going through the TV. It's one or the other, isn't it?
I got to say, I think I agree with the chat room here. I think we could have made quite a fatal error here for the Wii.
Especially since OnLive made that announcement like a few hours later. They did an impromptu press release to put on their website saying, well, you know, we've been working on this for a long time, but now that we've seen Nintendo's thing, we figured we better announce this. You know, OnLive is the cloud gaming service where you put in your controls, you got your whether you get the $100 virtual console for the TV, or you got your Mac or your PC playing. And now they've announced Android and iPad, and I think even iPhone will work with this service. You put in all the controls there, and the actual game, the full quality games, like the top AAA games for the Xbox and PS3, but they're being rendered on their servers in the cloud, and they send you back the video with minimal delay, surprisingly minimal delay. It's very high quality, up to 60p, 720p, 60 frames a second. It's really impressive. Now that's coming to the iPad and Android tablets. So now those things, which are already giving the Nintendo portable systems a run for their money, are going to play these high-end console games, even with the aid of a Bluetooth controller that resembles a Xbox or PlayStation controller made by OnLive. And they showed that you can use it as a separate controller to augment what you're seeing on your HD TV on that console. So just like the Nintendo Wii U system does with that separate screen in your lap, the tablet now can interact with that same game and display a secondary screen like a map or an overview, or also be used as a motion controller. You can use the gyroscopes and accelerometers that are built into these tablets. So why would anyone buy a Nintendo system when they can get a tablet for the same price that can play better games, better graphics, cheaper games, and they can convince their parents that, hey, I can use it for homework too?
Got a message from the chat room before Jane speaks that says, can you try and have less Red Bull for next week, please, Eric?
I'll try.
Okay. James, you were saying. The
reason for that is because nobody's heard of OnLive. Everybody knows Nintendo, and OnLive is, if they can get market, if they can get the sales, if they can, I don't know, where do you buy it?
That is the great point of the night, because I know what OnLive is, but I wouldn't go and seek it out. I'm not, you know, the marketing has been really, really poor.
Yes.
No one knows.
Yeah, the subscription is actually free. You can pay for games, but you can also rent games very inexpensively. And it's totally free for the actual subscription service. So you, Mac or PC is totally free. If you want, you can spend $100 for a virtual console, which is essentially a thin client. It just, it's the receiving end, and it also sends your controls back to their servers. And I believe that for that $100, it even comes with like one or two free games worth $60. So it's a really good deal. If you've got a fast enough internet connection, it's as good as a console.
Question in the chat room, isn't OnLive only in the US?
It may be.
Looks like it. I'm just having a look at the website now.
Yeah, that's another good reason that we wouldn't have heard about it. So the marketing would be crap in the UK. Interesting thing as well, Nintendo did their announcement and their stock went
down.
That's not the way it's supposed to be, chaps. The other thing I thought was really interesting was Reggie looked like he was actually one of those toys, you know, like the soldiers that you used to get in the 70s that had got like a big circular base on them. Because he stood at the front with the screen doing all its crap over above him. He never moved. He just stood there. It was like he was fixed to a base all the way through the whole thing. Didn't move an inch. If you go to the Engadget coverage of it, the live blog, and look at all the pictures that they took of the big screen, Reggie is in exactly the same position. The only thing that moves was his hands and his eyelids.
Weird. But by the way, interesting side note, OnLive is also going to take their tablets. So the tablet games are going to be available for iPad and Android this fall. And they're also going to bring out a web browser where the browsing is done and the rendering of the pages are done on their servers and sends it to the tablet, just like the games. So for instance, that provides, in essence, a full Flash browsing experience for the iOS devices. They said it's good enough even to play Flash games, which is amazing.
But you're sat in a chat show with four other UK people and a chat room full of UK people, and no one actually really cares now because we all switched off after we said it was US only.
Well, then I'm sorry I said anything.
But actually, to be honest with you, what it is one kind of the questions I have is how do OnLive make money? And obviously they make money through the subscriptions and things like that. And when are they going to become an international brand? Is it going to be the word of mouth thing when someone says, I've got this cool new gaming system, can I have a look at it, please? Well, no, you can't, have to switch my PC on first or switch on this sort of this appliance thing.
Well, are we talking about a bigger issue here? Who's switching the keyboard?
Hey, sorry.
Dude, mate. The bigger issue that we've got here at this juncture is the fact that are there brands like online, like OnLive, like Netflix, are they ever going to become international brands? Because I don't think they are. Because I think the issue is the licensing. The licensing of the studios, whether it's a gaming studio, whether it's a movie studio, is going to restrict these things to zonal. They have been desperate not to lose the regioning that they got with DVD, even though you've gone to the online market. And they fight tooth and nail to hold on to it. And the licensing is going to stop all of these things becoming international.
That's very interesting. Even if OnLive doesn't make it internationally, OnLive actually already has a few competitors. I haven't tried them out. But the whole cloud gaming thing, I think, is definitely the future. And I wonder if there isn't some kind of even quiet, tacit conspiracy against the marketing and growth of OnLive. Because if you think about it, no one likes them. They have no reason to be liked by anyone except possibly a few game developers who have again been slow to sign on with them. Any hardware manufacturer would hate them, including Microsoft and Apple, because it means you don't need their systems. Nintendo, Microsoft, Sony would hate them, and ISPs would hate them because they use gobs and gobs of bandwidth. So I wonder if that has something to do with it.
They're certainly not going to do anything to try and change it, though. Even if they don't actively stop it, they're not going to do anything to promote it.
Right.
You're not getting the assistance, are you? The peripheral support and infrastructure to drive your product forwards. Good one. Next thing, Facebook. Facebook have decided that if they know what you look like and you've been tagged in a previous photo, they're going to run an algorithm that's going to check out your facial recognition, and they're going to automatically apply it to pictures where you apparently exist. Not a good day for Facebook, really, was it?
They'll be really good at this. Always seem to make a major, major privacy faux pas every time they release a new service. Just brilliant at it. It just seems to be insert foot.
See, the one question I've got when I look at this kind of stuff with Facebook, is this genuine incompetence or is this a very cunning plan to do it and ride the storm because we'll get what we want anyway?
You mean, did they expect this kind of response or not?
Did they do this deliberately, knowing that they'd have to ride a wee storm and then it would go away once they'd ridden the press out?
It's tough to say. I think if Zuckerberg were acting alone, I think then you could say, yeah, he just didn't expect this would get that people that angry. But, you know, it's not just him running the company. So no. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. If they did this kind of thing once, then you'd say it's a cock up. But there is nothing that Facebook does in the privacy end of the market that they do properly. They always cock it up first, and then it's rectified. And it seems to be the degree of, what's the word I'm looking for? The degree of the kind of veracity of the reaction is what gauges their response. They just do it anyway. And then if it looks like it's one of those humdingers, they might back down. But if it's kind of like, oh, well, actually, we could do with a press storm for about 3 or 4 days here, and then we'll get what we want anyway.
Well, what it is that Facebook are computer scientists, they're businessmen, and they're not sociologists. And what they are is they are trying to establish, and they've been clear about it, is trying to establish some kind of social change where people's privacy is less of an issue. And Google tried it and have now backed. Like, how many privacy gaffes have Google made in the last 6 months since they screwed up on Buzz and things like that? They've been quite careful. And I think Facebook have just gone, no, sod that. We're going to continue doing this. We're going to change society by pissing everybody off. And I imagine it's probably 3 steps forward and 2 steps back, but they are making progress. And that's their idea of social change.
Or maybe, as Ewan says, it's deliberate, and maybe there's no such thing as bad marketing. Mm. Maybe it's deliberate.
Well, there's never anything to do with bad marketing.
See, I think this is the interesting point, is that if you look at the kind of pure logic and rationale behind Facebook, you know, I look at my own position for a certain degree. You know, I spend all week trying to talk to anyone and everyone who'll listen to anything that I've got to say. I do the Daily Show. We do 4 shows extra as far as the panel shows are concerned. We promote and sponsor people that support us. And then all of a sudden, I'm going, hang on a minute. I don't want my picture tagged on Facebook automatically. If you Google my name, all you get back in the first page is pictures of me. How can I then do that stuff and expect privacy? How can I create a public profile on a system which is designed for social interaction, where it says, do you want to close your profile down to other people that don't know you? And I can say yes. And then if I don't do that, how can I then get upset over the fact that my picture's suddenly appearing on Google searches, or is suddenly appearing in other people who've taken pictures of me in compromising positions where I wasn't aware they were taking a picture of me, and their algorithm happens to be very good at actually looking at the back of my head and saying, oh, blimey, that's Ewan Rankin.
Started almost to talk as fast as I do there. You know what I think is interesting, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because I was focusing on other news stories this week. I didn't get to really dig into this. So I think what is going on is that Facebook flipped a switch and turned on a feature where now when you take a picture of your friend, someone whom you've already befriended on Facebook, it will then recognize his or her face and suggest that person's to you as a photo tag. It will say, hey, so-and-so is in the picture that you took. That's so-and-so, I think. Do you want to tag them? And so if that's really the case, I don't really see where the privacy problem comes in, because chances are you were with the person when they took your photo and you're already friends with them. So it would be shared and they could tag you no matter what. So whether or not it suggests you based on your face or they saw your face and tagged you, I don't really see how that violates privacy.
It's not a privacy thing, Eric. What it is they know how to do it, and they are the first people who, Google, you've got Google goggles. And the question I asked when I spoke to some Google guys is it possible to do face recognition and dog recognition to find out what breed? And they said, well, the technology's there, but we're not implementing it. And Facebook they've done it. And actually it's that beyond that comfort zone of, hang on a minute, there's some intelligence in there that knows what I look like, and a face and a visage of some, you know, that it be recognised is quite terrifying. And it's not really a privacy thing; it's a recognisability thing.
Let's be also very clear that the Stasi had accurate voice recognition in the 1950s and face recognition in the 1960s. Accurate voice and face recognition. This technology is in the least bit new. It is a long, long way in development.
And you know, every...
go ahead, Eric.
Sorry. Apple knows your face too, potentially. If we want to get scared about, if we want to engage in runaway fears, I'm not saying you guys are, but a lot of people about this, and say that just because a company has the technology, they can do harm with it. Well, why don't we go after Apple? Because iPhoto does face recognition, and so does Aperture. This is becoming common throughout many, many pieces of software. If the issue is, let's make sure that this isn't used the wrong way by putting it into a law or something, or dealing with it as a larger societal issue, I don't think this is a Facebook specific problem, because I don't think they have any more they haven't said they're going to use it nefariously, and I don't really think that we have reason to think that they would more than someone else would. Although I understand the gut reaction behind that, but I think it's misguided in this instance.
See, the key thing to remember is that if you're talking about the permissions element was actually breached a long, long time ago when you allowed your friends to tag you, or when Facebook allowed your friends to tag you manually. You know, so where's the difference between Facebook giving a list of suggestions and you dragging out a square across a person's face and then Facebook saying, here's a list of all your friends, is it one of these people? You know, that's a very subtle change between those two. But it's no different in terms of the ability. The ability is the issue of the fact that Facebook have given your friends the ability to drag out a square across a face and pick a name to put to that square, whether it's right or it's wrong. Now, the interesting thing here is I had an ex-girlfriend who I sent a picture to, and it was a picture of an ape, and I dragged out the square across the face, and I wrote on it, Rachel Evans. And it let me. And it's tagged and it's associated with her profile now. So people can search for Rachel on Facebook and they'll see a picture of an ape.
That's not good, is it?
No, it let me do it. Now she can then go and remove that tag, fair enough. But the damage is done. I can slide in. James is not my friend on Facebook, but if I think I want to put a picture up of
he's tagging
of
his face as we speak. He's tagging his face. Look at him.
But I can go in and I can get to Facebook. I can drag a square across James Hart's face and I can tag him. And it might not actually be James Hart. It could be Osama bin Laden, but Facebook will let me do that. Now, surely the issue goes further, far, far further back to the point where you're saying, look, Facebook, you shouldn't allow people to tag things that are not their own image. You have to tag something from your own profile.
But James is alerted when you tag him and has the option to permanently remove that tag, and you can never again tag him on that photo.
That's the case now.
Right.
If you try to tag them and then it said, no, hang on a minute, that's not them. You think it might be somebody, but it's not actually them.
So you know what would be more embarrassing is if it looked at the picture of an ape and said, oh, hey, that's so-and-so.
Yeah.
You've been tagged in a photo. Wait a minute, it's an ape.
I've just realized I'm going to have to go through the podcast and bleep out a surname. Because...
Yeah, he shouldn't have said that.
No, that was her name when I knew her and she got married, but I think it's actually still her name. But
partially safe, then.
Have we got any other news stories you want to talk about?
Magazines on tablets we were going to talk about.
Magazines on tablets. Now, also we had Newsstand came out, which was a fantastic crap feature that came out in OS 5. Just to give you a quick preview here we go. There it is, look, see, it's that icon there.
For those who are listening to the podcast.
Yeah. As you can see, mine's blank. I have no news items, no stands to put in my news thing. There we go.
He's got his iPod out and his iPad out and he's got icons over the face of his child. It looks really scary, actually.
We should wait till you see it for real. Weird.
It looked like their eyes were replaced with icons.
Some kind of horror movie.
So... we've got Newsstand on the iPad and all other things, but I mean the one we want to talk about Apple tomorrow in the Mac show. We don't want to talk about it here on the Big Show, but I thought it raised an interesting question that Apple are seriously jumping behind the selling of magazines through the Newsstand process. They're pumping that forwards. Maybe they're getting a bit of financial impetus from the magazines themselves, but Esquire, Vogue, those kind of people are all coming through. My question was, is magazines on tablets a done deal now?
Big news, big news. I almost forgot.
I desperately like the idea.
Oh,
Go on, Eric. What'd you say?
Newsflash. Just this morning, Mac Rumors reported, and it was now confirmed by ZDNet and a bunch of others, that they have removed the restriction that said that you can only do an in-app subscription or an in-app purchase if the same offer is made. It has to be made at or below the price offered elsewhere in order to do an in-app subscription. So now people can charge whatever they want. They can charge 8 times the price for the iPad's in-app subscription than they do on their website. That's allowable now. That's a big, 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 big deal that was quietly reversed this morning.
Oh, that is. And that's a bad sign as well.
Well, now you see why I was doing this. That is pretty big news.
That is huge jazz news.
Hands. We thought in the chat room was thinking jazz hands?
Jazz hands.
The headlights. Look out!
So
incoming news!
What we're saying is, if you do an in-app purchase, the price that you could pay on the in-app purchase could be in excess of what it would be to purchase the game from the App Store under normal conditions.
Games, I don't know. They said it was media, and they said in particular, you know, I think it's specifically not games. I think they said it's in particular, it's movies, TV shows, music, books, magazines, periodicals.
This is so they can make their cut, right?
I think it might have something to do with, the Financial Times said, that they said, we're out, we're calling it quits. They're not going through the App Store anymore. And maybe they were worried that others would follow suit because, people objected to the fact that Apple takes a 30% cut and doesn't by default give them any subscriber information. They don't pass that along to them by default. User has to opt in, and who would want to do that? Yes, please send the ads to my home. I love junk mail. And so to them, they thought they were losing a lot of money. So now if they choose to, the publishers can charge more for the convenience of that in-app subscription and cover the cost, recoup the cost. Whereas before, they were told they couldn't.
See, that's a knee-jerk reaction to a bad sales model. That's all it can be. It's a tactical thing to say, whoa, what are we going to do otherwise? I mean, let's face it, if they hadn't done that, the whole thing would collapse, and it just gives it another 3 months, probably.
Yeah, I mean, according to the article that I'm looking on in Engadget, it's saying here, under the new guidelines, publishers will be able to offer subscriptions to content outside of the App Store as long as their apps don't include a buy button that directs away from Apple's marketplace.
Right. Okay.
That's a real subtle change.
Oh, God.
Well, subtle in wording, but not an implication.
Hmm.
Because people had all... Here, I'll show you the original text Mac Rumors had it. But also... Oh, okay, here it is. The original text said... apps can read or play approved content, magazines, newspapers, books, audio, music, video that is sold outside of the app for which Apple will not receive a portion of the revenues, provided that the same content is also offered in the app using iApp at the same price or less than is offered outside the app. And also based on that wording and elsewhere, there was a lot of speculation that that would maybe make things like Netflix and RDO and Hulu that only exclusively offered their subscription payments outside of the app illegal in the App Store, that maybe Apple would pull those because technically that violated their terms of service. And so that it's a comfort for those people too.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
Where the chat room is going, we use the web.
Yeah. I was, this is just making me so angry.
Oh, go on, Sarah, your turn.
Missy's angry.
I totally... What Eric said about what the Financial Times have done, good on them. The more people should do that.
Which is surprising as well, because that's Murdoch, isn't it?
No, not the FT.
Isn't the FT Murdoch?
No, it's Pearson Group.
Oh, right, okay. I stand corrected. Thank you, Sarah. Our Oracle.
Just let go.
No, never.
Chat Russell, mate. That's what makes me so angry about. Oh. Wish I could get as angry as Eric was earlier.
That's impossible.
Snapper Garibaldi, woman. Snapper Garibaldi.
Scene. And a dog on your ankle, I think, yeah.
All right, getting back to magazines. Are magazines a done deal on tablets?
They should be.
If they're just magazines, we were discussing it before the show, weren't we? If all they are magazines where you just flip this thing and it's a nice thing to do and you just read it, it's fine. But as soon as they start putting flashing stuff on there that just distracts you from what you're actually trying to read, maybe they've overcooked it.
But the problem we've got is that we've got actually page-turning form factors which are identical to existing magazines and newspapers. in a lot of cases. I mean, I did the Wired thing when it first came out, and I looked at that. And okay, it was nice because you could kind of skim up as well. But a lot of it, you know, you went
say skin up,
skim up.
All right, with an M.
Okay, this is okay. How's this for a scenario? Supposing Amazon actually said, right, okay, because of the way that physical magazines are produced these days, we're going to start selling magazine subscriptions through Kindle on the Amazon website.
They do for some things, don't they? Or is that just newspapers?
You can get newspapers, definitely.
I was just thinking magazine subscriptions.
I think you've always been able to get subscriptions to periodicals, whether it's daily newspapers or whether it's monthly magazines, through the Kindle.
But that's a great idea. I like that. But as I can't remember what was said, that if they start messing around with it, then forget it. I think it kind of loses its value.
I'm a little confused. I'm a little confused what you're getting at with the thrust of your question here. Are you saying what do we think, or what is going to be the future of magazines as subscription based news and information? Or are you saying it on a tablet versus on paper? Where exactly are you getting at?
Well, my point was really, I think that you guys are actually misinterpreting what I'm saying. I'm saying if you look at the way that magazines tend to act on tablets, they act like magazines. They're not acting like interactive publishing systems that you would have expected could have happened. So, yes, okay, there's hot links that take you to other stories and other pages now, as opposed to just straightforwardly turning a page. But in terms of interaction with stories, they're very, very limited. It really is more like a page-turning experience than anything else. And one of the other things is as well is that we're subjected to an awful lot of Americanized magazines. And the problem with the Americanized magazines is that you're talking significant proportions, 60% advertising, which we're not used to here in the UK. You know, it's the advertising is much more through the vein of the magazine rather than it being a block page that constantly splits it up. And I'm saying that I think, unless you stop magazines on the iPad being like magazines, it'll die a death. It's got to become something different. It's got to be a different form factor that really functions completely differently. And I don't think it functions that much differently than an existing magazine does.
But this comes back to the whole web thing. You can do that on the web, and you've got these. The chat room was already listing a number of different magazines, like T3, I think, is one of them. And there are some future tech magazines that are out there which have these really excellent. I mean, they are quite flashy and stuff like that. Interactive areas to them, so you can do sort of 3D views of stuff. And all you need is a web browser to see them. So what's wrong with opening up Safari on your iPad and using that instead if it's HTML5 compatible?
With HTML5, that really opens up the scope for that a lot, doesn't it?
Well, this is the interesting point, is that Playboy has just opened up its website because it has no choice. It can't go into the App Store as a magazine because of the sexual content issue. And the subscriptions to the current website for Playboy have gone through the roof. People aren't bothered about whether they're doing it on the pad or whether they're doing it through a browser.
Well, and also I suspect Playboy is one of the few magazines that might be offered there that where people aren't as concerned about the artistic layout of the text and relative to the images.
I think what you will do there is a complete disservice to realizing that the pornography market is probably what would lead this in the right direction in terms of interactivity. I don't mean that in any other way than as is all of these wants. You'll probably find that the light porn market or the heavy porn market will look at interactive magazines and would make them far better as user interfaces.
That's probably true, but Steve Jobs, it was pretty clear he just doesn't want to sell anything that he would consider pornography on those Apple devices.
No, I think that's fine. That's okay. But what I'm saying is because of the fact that it can't get in, you'll probably find that Playboy will do far more because it's in the web, because it's got that opportunity to be more creative and more interactive without the constraints that go along with the form factor of the iPad. It's now working in a browser rather than working in an application.
Right. And I don't really see anything wrong with that. I think I love web apps. You know, if they don't have to give Apple a cut, that's great if they can make that work. I have a thought about, you know, what might the future for magazine be. You know, magazines have been dying for the longest time, partly due to cable TV, but also partly because of the internet. And when you see a magazine or a newspaper or any kind of subscription based thing with their website, and when they put their content on the web, it usually is with a much less artistic and design oriented layout. It's usually a block of text and a rectangular image in like almost a postage stamp size somewhere on the page. And they don't spend a dime on the design or the layout of that. And it's just, you know, there's copy paste post, you know, whereas you open their magazine, it's got, and it's got the beautiful image coming out like it's coming at you. And then that's a circle and that one's a triangle. And this one has the title in size 86 font, you know, and then it's got 70,000 advertisements in it on every other page. And I think that kind of layout, I think they've kind of strangled themselves with that. I think you're right. People hate having that many advertisements. The only reason that was even doable ever was because there was no internet alternative, and because it's easier to flip a page and it's less annoying and less obtrusive to flip a paper page than it is to do that electronic page turning motion and find, it's a full screen ad or it's a freaking movie trying to play for me and drag me to their website, you know? So I think magazines may have a better job monetizing their content if they don't focus as much on like that full page design kind of thing that means you have to flip your finger across the screen more often, and instead just focused on writing better content. And having said that, I think a lot of magazines will cease to exist because people will realize that in the absence of popular and attractive and flashy graphics and layout to attract the eye on the newsstand, the magazines aren't worth reading to begin with.
Blimey. Doesn't take much to get you going.
It's about the content.
That's the point, actually, because you need engineers to be able to program the flashy graphics, and actually the flashy graphics becomes almost like a parallel task. And I think you've got to get some serious synergy between the content providers and the flashy graphics makers. That's a technical term. I'm not expecting you to be up to speed with that. Again, T3 is a perfect example.
Flashy graphic makers, yes.
Fancy graphic makers, yeah. Do you see them in the job ads? Flashy graphics maker wanted.
Eric comes off the back of this show and there's a big cylinder of oxygen right next to him that he takes on.
I just pass out right on the desk here.
Well, the one thing about sort of digital mags, for the most part, everything I seem to see is nothing but a glorified PDF reader.
Yeah.
I've not seen anything that's not just Zinio particularly.
No, I mean, there is stuff that you can get a lot of choices in your page layout. So you can go to the completely different pages from it and flick ahead. But a lot of the time it is really very, very linear and very, very samey. They're not good. They could end up with a real problem, I think, long term. We probably should stop there because we're up to an hour already. we need to thank a few people before we disappear and forget everyone else that's been on the panel like I did last week. Sorry. We've got first one to thank is Wirecast, because they provide us with the video software to do the show. But what they've also done this month is, for this month and the next 3 months, they've given us 4 copies of Wirecast to give away. So if you'd like to win a copy of Wirecast, all you have to do is send an email to us. If you go to BagelTech's homepage and look at the bottom of the screen, you'll see a logo for Wirecast, the exact picture that I'm showing now on the video, and you click on that and it'll open up an email for you with the title Wirecast competition. And all you have to do is, under the text underneath, say, "I deserve a copy of Wirecast because," and then tell us why you deserve a copy of Wirecast, and we will pick out the most worthy of the responses that we get, and they will get a free copy of Wirecast. It's that simple. It's a $500 piece of software, people. So you will get a free copy, and it works on Windows and it works on Mac, so you don't have to worry about platform and all that kind of stuff. Go on. Does it work on Linux as well? I don't think it does it?
No, don't worry about it.
I don't think it works on Linux.
No, I know. That's why I was saying. Don't have to worry.
Nothing really works on Linux.
Wicked wine, mightn't it?
So that's all you need. A copy of Wirecast is yours if you send us an email that says, "I deserve a copy of Wirecast because," and you type it in. The other people that we've got to thank, of course, are UK2.net. They are the people that keeps alive. We say it every week. We used up nearly 4 terabytes of data last month. We'd have been lost without them. So please, please, please support them. We've got a fantastic offer for you. If you go to the Bagel Tech website and you look at the bottom, you'll see the UK2 logo. Click on that and there's a tracking link that knows that we've sent you. So if you want to sign into your UK2 account, use that link. If you want to go and look at their services, use that link. If you're sitting now listening to the podcast, hit the link for God's sake. They will know that we've sent you. They'll know that you're a returning customer from us. But if you're there to buy some, check out the prices. Their prices are pretty good already anyway. But here's the real benefit. If you're a Bagel Tech listener, when you get to check out with your relevant services or products that you've bought from them, use the offer code Bagel Tech, and when you do, you're going to get 15% instantly off the total bill, which is just a phenomenal amount. I mean, that's really, really good, and that's going to make things like web hosting and domain name purchases very, very competitive. They're already competitive on things like VPS server and co-location, so I think it's going to really tip you over the edge to get those services from them. And it just works out, whenever you need to check out, you use the Bagel Tech coupon, you'll get the reduction. So don't worry about existing customer, returning customer, any of that kind of stuff. UK2.net, please support them. We really, really value their support, and we're desperate for it to continue. Otherwise, I'm afraid we go off air if they disappear in a heartbeat. It's that simple. The other thing that I need you to do, if you can, please, is if you listen to the show and you've got an iTunes account or any of the other shows on Bagel Tech, one of the things that keeps us up in the charts each week is the number of reviews that we get. So the more reviews that we get, the higher we go in the charts, as well as the number of downloads. And we've done pretty well in the last couple of months with downloads, but we keep yinging and yanging in and out of the charts, and it's to do with, I think, reviews. The people that are staying above us are the ones that got more consistent reviews. So please give us a review in iTunes if you possibly can. I'd be really, really grateful.
Interesting. So are you talking about like where it says like today's or this week's top podcast?
Yeah, if you look in the charts, so say you go to technology or to tech news and then you look at the podcast charts, if we have an episode of a show, then what you'll find is the day after, where people's iTunes accounts start automatically downloading it, we suddenly whiz in the top 20 or 30, and then literally the day after we'll disappear out again. But what I've noticed is with the Mac show, the more reviews that we've got, the longer we seem to stay up. So it'll probably be Sunday or Monday before we start to fall out again of that top 20.
That may be some interesting insight into that algorithm. I know Dane Golden always said it was just because that chart was based on number of new subscribers that day or that week. But if they're now incorporating number of reviews, that's really interesting to know. And is it enough for people just to give you a star rating, or do they also need to type something?
I don't know. I haven't got a clue to that. But what I'm saying is, if you type in the search tech news, then what returns is number of new subscribers against the phrase tech news as well. And I'm thinking that there's a couple of podcasts that I look at, and I don't believe they get that many new subscribers. And I think they've got some little tweak where people log off and log back on, or unsubscribe and subscribe, and they've got a chain of people that do it. But if you look at the charts, I think the charts are based on numbers of downloads and popularity. But what I'm saying is, I think they give you longer in the charts to correct your position if you've got more reviews, if you've got longevity with your podcast, so you don't zip in and zip out quite so much. Because I've noticed that we started to stay longer in that chart as we've gone on through the week, and we are getting more downloads, yes. But I think it's also, I've noticed that it's to do with the number of reviews that we've got. There's something in the algorithm associated with the review. I don't know what it is, but reviews are great. They help promote us in there as well. And when people log on and look at the show, you know, they've got people there saying that they like us. Then thank you very much. We love you to bits. Where can we get a hold of you, James?
I'm on the Twitters as twitter.com/SYZYGY, SYZYG. And also about.me/James Hart has got all the gubbins what I do, including a gently festering YouTube account, because video is just too much like hard work.
Jolly good, mate. Promote. Ian, where can we get hold of you?
I'm on Twitter as well at TIOA BOA, which stands for turn it off and back on again. You'll see me muttering through the week on various bits and bobs.
Keep the stories coming, mate, because they've been very useful this week. Thank you very much.
No worries.
Sarah?
You get hold of me on my website, which is sarahjaneuk.com, or on Twitter at sarahjaneuk.
And last but my name is least, Eric.
Really? The one day I have a cool thingy?
Oh, shit.
I wasn't going to say anything.
The one day I have one, and we skip over it.
After cocking up last week, I am so focused on not forgetting to do the runaround that I've completely forgotten the cool thingy.
EricLanigan.com, by the way, twitter.com/ericlanigan.
Email you me cool thingies and I'll post them in some show notes. Now, Sarah, we're doing some show notes via a wiki now, aren't we?
Oh, okay. I didn't realize we were announcing that yet.
No, we're not. We haven't set it up yet, but we're going to.
We are trialing using a wiki for show notes and for other information about Bagel Tech News as well, yes.
And it looks pretty good at the moment. I think we're going to go ahead with that. So the show notes issue is finally resolved. Thanks. Google Groups can go shove it. There we go. We'll do cool. Keep your cool thing for next week, Eric, because you don't want to.
Oh, but well, it actually it ties right into what we were talking about.
Oh, go on. What have you got? Oh, that okay, thing. So- that was that is the biggest waste of money going, and it's friggin' expensive. $30.
What?
$30 for that thing.
What? Is
it? And it dominates.
You're talking about the Fling from 10-1 Design?
Yeah.
I don't think it's 30, but you don't like it? I mean, I thought it worked terrifically when I tried it out. It
absolutely dominates your screen from the pictures I've seen.
And what did it do?
And it's like $30. It's a joystick.
Ooh. So you can actually play proper games on your iPhone.
10-1 Design Fling Mini Joystick for iPhone. There you go. That's Eric's choice.
Yeah, so it's at 10-1 Design, T-E-N-O-N-E, design.com. It's the Fling. They just announced the Fling Mini, which gives you two analog joysticks for your iPhone or iPod Touch. The iPad ones have already existed for a few months. I got to try them at Macworld. I thought they were terrific. I mean, they glide across the screen, and I thought it was like the feel of it, the responsiveness of that little springy joystick was like exactly on par with like an Xbox or a console joystick. But the reason they wanted to bring it up also was because we forgot to say it during the E3 talk that the Sony also announced that their NGP game console, their portable next generation portable, has been rebranded the PlayStation Vita, V-I-T-A, and people are saying that it might actually be a contender for the iPad and iPod Touch markets, which right now are the most popular portable gaming systems on the planet, according to Apple and other numbers. And part of that is because it's got superb graphics, excellent controls, dual analog sticks, and a surprisingly low price point of $249. They're probably going to lose money on it from what I can picture because it's got dual touch screens and everything, or touch on the back and on the front screen as well. But I think that when you look at these kinds of analog controls that add that to the Apple devices and any tablets, really, I think that's why, you know, Sony and, yeah, there it is right there on the video. I think that's why Sony and Nintendo have the hardest competition that they've ever had.
This thing here, if you want it for your iPad, you can get one for your iPad at $20, but you only get the one. If you want the twin one for your iPhone, which just blots the screen out entirely, as you can see here, it's $30 for the two.
Yeah, I admit that's a little bit silly looking, but maybe they'll shrink it down. And at the very least, though, you know, $20 or $30 for the pair is you know, if you're a kid and you're trying to get your parents to buy that, to turn your existing game system into, you know, play a first-person shooter or something versus having to buy a whole new console, that's a pretty good deal.
Dude, if there is 50 cents worth of production cost in that thing, I will eat my left shoe. Coming.
No, I talked to him and I tried it. It's a sophisticated, like a plastic resin, and it's patented, and it's got a conductive or capacitive metal on the back that slides across the screen in such a way that it doesn't scratch it. There's actually a lot of tech that goes into it. The resistance to get that kind of spring back to the center on a plastic spring is very tricky.
Here we go.
I'm not going to bite.
Well, you don't have to.
Sucker.
The rest of us will.
We'll be back again next week on Thursday night with the Bagel Tech Big Show. And I promise I'm going to remember to stick everything in next week. I'm so sorry. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. I'm sorry, everyone. What a cocker.
A producer, don't we?
We need a producer. We need someone whispering in my ear going, stop your...